Hello there and welcome back to the Chat Shit Get Fit, the fitness news where we unpack the week's biggest news in health and fitness. I'm Bill and as always, I'm joined by Tom.
Hello there.
Hello there, Obi-Wan. This week, we take a closer look at, does keto stop gains? Well, we've got a new research paper that explores that very question. Following that quite naturally, we also go into some new carbohydrate recommendations. Very exciting. But before that, Tom, we have got an update on nicotine in sports, and we've got a new research paper that tests the accuracy of the Apple Watch and the Whoop band.
Incoming drama indeed.
Let's get into this week's the fitness news. Okay, everybody, the first piece of news this week. For all of you regulars out there, this might be quite familiar. Nicotine in sports. So if you cast your minds back to the Fitness News 11, we did discuss isolated nicotine usage, so not in cigarettes, and how you could use it in a gym setting for performance. Well, we've now got a new paper, guys. And that paper is titled, Should We Be Concerned with Nicotine in Sports? Analysis from 60,802 doping control tests in Italy. We'll give you a quick recap, actually, before we...
Yeah.
If you are new around here, because I'm not expecting you to pause this, go back to Fitness News 11. So if you're not aware, caffeine is similar in the sense that nicotine is a stimulant, okay? So sometimes when we spoke about it, we did compare the two and that they're both stimulants. So what I mean by that is it'll increase your heart rate, your blood pressure will increase, and things like the contractility of your heart tissue will also increase as well. However, as we did speak about, it's obviously commonly associated with cigarettes.
Yeah.
So... just the thought of nicotine. So if anyone was to think about nicotine, you'd automatically go to a negative place, wouldn't you? You wouldn't think, oh, you know, it's like caffeine, is it? I'll give it a go. You wouldn't think that at all, would you? You'd think, oh, cigarette's bad.
Yeah, it's that association with it straight away, the stigma. I mean, it is still a substance, and it is
Yeah, is that, yeah. Well, we spoke about caffeine last week, didn't we? Was it last week?
We did, indeed.
Caffeine? Yeah, about your fucking transcending beyond the planes of habitual use.
Yeah, it is concerning. It's not actually a laughing matter. Like, I do need help, and I do think me basically being on the podcast talking about caffeine on several occasions has been a cry for help that has just gone unheard.
Unheard?
Or ignored.
What do you want me to do about it?
I don't know. Do you get like a caffeine camp you can go to? Like
caffeine camp?
Or like you lock him in a bathroom or something. I don't know. And I'm just begging on the other side of the door, you know, just look, just one cappuccino. just one lungo. And maybe a venti latte. And a cortado for the come down, maybe.
Cortados, they're fucking mental, them, aren't they?
They are. I don't know what they are. They're not a flat white. They're not a cappuccino.
There's a guy at the gym who always orders them. He always orders them, and it's like he's the only one who does. But it's basically just coffee with a little bit of milk in, a little bit of hot
milk.
Which
sounds like most coffee, to be fair.
Yeah, but it's a shot, though, isn't it? It's not like you don't put any water. It's like a shot of a double shot of espresso, or whatever.
I have no idea how they're made. I just know I like them.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah.
Anyway,
in fact, this isn't good for my addiction, Bill.
No, let's move on now.
You're an enabler.
Yeah, you're
enabler. Terrible.
Fuck off.
Yeah, going back to nicotine.
Yeah, nicotine. So we'll go through some key points just to sort of, so you're up to date. Basically, it's all to do with dopamine, right? So when that releases, you get a nice feeling, don't you, of dopamine. You get feelings of well-being. You get feelings of alertness. So it's a good thing to have, right? So that's what you get with nicotine, which is obviously why people take it in the cigarette form. But obviously, we'll talk about how that works in the gym setting. Another thing to remember from that episode is as a short half-life, now this is where some of the issues come in, because... I think last week we did it, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about caffeine. Sorry, mate, I'm going to have to bring caffeine up again. Sorry.
That's all right.
We spoke about caffeine very recently, how that can have up to a 10-hour half-life. So that can stay in the system quite a long time, okay? Well, nicotine, after about an hour or two, the effects will start to diminish. So the issue that is, it could potentially lead to high consumption, so people just smashing it, like basically on a conveyor belt of just smashing nicotine, whether that's in the gum form or actually cigarettes, because it does wear off so quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas caffeine, because it's in the system longer, you don't crave it as often as you might nicotine.
So not that I want to keep on associating with nicotine with smoking, even though it is associated with it.
Mm.
But for the sake of the podcast, I don't want to talk about smoking too much. Mm-hmm. But you can kind of see how like chain smokers happen with nicotine. It's because it's only a very short effect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, before you're needing more. So that's where the whole chain smoking kind of thing comes from. Is where after that 2 hour period or whatever it is, you know, very quickly you're needing more. You're needing more of this substance.
Yeah. But I mean, in a gym setting, the way we argued that it could be beneficial, because in the gym, for example, you're in the gym for what, an hour, 2 hours, right? Doing a session. Well, we did have some data on it that looked quite promising, and it basically revolved around people's perceptions of discomfort. Because if you do a hard session in the gym and you have a nicotine gum, whatever, because of that dopamine release, you could potentially have your perception of discomfort could lessen, allowing you to go harder without going, oh no, I'm fucked, basically, right? So it's all to do with dopamine, right? However, what we did conclude with, so don't get too excited, what we did conclude with is if you are going to experiment with nicotine, which we do not recommend at the stage still, so we're going to basically repeat what we said at the end of last time, we still don't recommend that you fuck around with it yet at this point. But if you are going to, it would probably say 2 milligram of gum 20 minutes prior to training, or you would dissolve 5 milligrams of nicotine in the form of, I think it's called subligual strip, subligual?
Well, it's the, we've talked spoken about before, it's like those, you used to get the Listerine strips, didn't you, whatever they were called.
Yeah, basically, it's a 5 milligram strip or something, it's called subligual or some bollocks.
And it dissolves on your tongue.
Yeah, that's if you were going to do it right. But as I said, at this stage, we're not recommending it. But as we said, the key takeaway is that nicotine is a stimulant, much like caffeine. It's unfortunately, it's just, well, not unfortunately, but it's basically, it just doesn't last as long, right? That's where the problems lie.
I mean, unless you're in like a very high profile sport where, you know, your career basically relies on you winning, you know, or your performance, for example, I don't think it's really worth taking it for the performance benefits.
It's funny you said that, Tom. It's funny you said that. Very funny you said that, because we're going to now move on to the study at hand, which is actually all about
almost
that
like
kind
I've
of
cheated.
Sport. Yeah, you've cheated there, mate. Yeah, fucking that wasn't written down. So we've got a study then. I'll give you a background on what this study is about, because you might not know this, but WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency, that is right, isn't it, Tom?
Say again, sorry.
We should not even listen in.
No, sorry. I was looking at...
World Anti-Doping Agency. That is right, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was just going to say, I was just looking at the title of this study, obviously without jumping too far ahead here, but I do see it was conducted in Italy. Yeah. And the first thing in my mind was, thank God this wasn't conducted in France.
In France?
Because there would be like a 99% positive rating for people that were doped up with nicotine.
Oh, God, they love it over there, don't they? Constantly belting them, aren't they? Yeah, they love a good smoke, yeah. But back to WADA, so World Anti-Doping Agency, they actually have it on their monitoring program. So if you're not aware, this WADA, they have this program which basically keeps an eye on substances or anything basically that can affect the way the body performs or feels. So obviously that's important when they're looking to ban substances that could give people an edge, for example. But they've got nicotine on this program due to its high use in winter sports. And although the current research, as I think we did talk about, doesn't really support a clear ergogenic effect, right? Obviously we spoke about dopamine, that's obviously a subjective experience, but it doesn't really, the data is not really a clear ergogenic effect, which is one of the reasons why we wouldn't recommend it at this stage. But basically this paper wanted to see how much use there actually was. What the paper did is they got urine samples and they obtained those in competition at different national and international sports events, obviously held in Italy, as we said, and this was during a period of 2012 to 2020. An overall mean of 22.7% of the samples, that's 13,804, showed nicotine intake, with male samples also displaying higher positivity rates than female. There was a lower positivity rate in endurance versus power and strength athletes, and a higher positivity rate in team versus individual sports. And they reckon that's probably accounted for by the differences in physiological and psychological demands and the desire for socialization. They're obviously referring to the team there. I mean, I can see that makes sense. Obviously, if you're in a team sport, sometimes you could argue there's different levels of stress because you're doing it for a team. You've obviously got the social aspect as well on the side.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more that goes into it, okay? Key takeaway really there is that 22.7 of the samples, 13,804, showed nicotine intake, right? So why are we telling you this? Why do you give a fuck about what's going on in Italy? well, when things like this come out, right, because this is quite a new paper, people tend to get excited. Okay, when athletes do anything in the sporting world, companies latch onto it and go, fucking hell, athlete XYZ takes this, it must be great. And they can easily put a little picture of fucking any old athlete and be like, I take nicotine, blah, blah, blah. And everyone would get hard-ons and they'll want to go grab it, right? Mm. So what I would say for this is keep your eye out for any stuff around nicotine.
Yeah.
And think about that. Think about the statement risk versus reward. As Tom, you mentioned, you wouldn't even bother unless you were a top sports person, maybe trying to get that little tiny edge.
Yeah.
Right? That's their risk versus reward. Their risk is that they might get addicted to this substance, whatever, but the reward is they could win a sporting competition, which is their livelihood. If you're just a gym goer doing a 5K park run on a Saturday morning, why are you smashing nicotine gum? Like, before, there's no, the risk and the reward ratio doesn't really add up, in my opinion.
If you're just like a recreational exerciser, you know, I wouldn't be going on to MyProtein to look for some Benson Hedges.
But
it's a line I never thought I would say.
Like, as I said, obviously we spoke about it recently because some data, this has obviously now come out as well, there seems to be more going on about it. And I also would expect to now see more data coming out on its ergogenic effects going forward. And as this paper actually does state, I'll read this out, is that WADA should continue to monitor nicotine use and support research that further determines user trends to understand why and how athletes use nicotine, right? So as I said, we're probably going to see more on this. So just keep your eye out, because companies, you know, capitalist society, supply and demand, they'll see a demand for it because athletes are using it, and that's what happens, right? So as we said before, I wouldn't recommend fucking around at this stage, to be honest. You know, unless you happen to be listening and you're, I don't know, an Olympian, which would be lovely if you are.
Although saying that, personally, I don't think something like this would ever take off. Not at least in a commercial setting. Pretty much, yeah. How much faith does the supplement industry place on this whole idea of, like, you know, clean supplements, additive free, fucking soul free, and God knows what else? Mm-hmm. So last thing I'm assuming they're going to do is start associating with something that has been stigmatized as something that is usually associated with smoking.
I mean, that's what we said last time, wasn't it? We said last time that even though, because we actually mentioned on the last podcast, you know, obviously I'd recommend go listening to that, actually, Fitness News 11, but we also spoke about other, like, cognitive associations with nicotine as well. So there is some, like, kind of positive stuff out there, especially, like, in an elderly population. But
with nicotine, not smoking.
Yeah, nicotine. Yeah,
just to clarify.
Isolated nicotine, okay? It wasn't in smoking, isolated nicotine. But as we said in that episode, it's very hard for this to be pushed forward simply because of association with cigarettes.
Yeah.
People always think of it as cigarettes. They won't think of it.
And the thing is, also on a personal level, from someone that, you know, I was a heavy smoker in the past, like, I don't know if, like, the acute effects of what nicotine may give me is well worth the effects that I get when I have that come down after the period of where the nicotine wears off.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Kind of repeating myself earlier, you know, from earlier saying that I don't think it's worth it. But yeah, I just don't think that the acute effects are worth the long-term effects of becoming addicted to a substance such as nicotine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do get cranky. You know, you get the complete opposite of what those benefits become once you've taken the source itself.
So, guys, that is the update on nicotine. I said, if you want more, you know, deep dive on that, go check out Fitness News 11. Next piece of news. And this is actually quite an interesting one, because when I sent this over, when we were looking at the notes, Tom, you mentioned how you saw this and you were like, did I send this to you? Because you read it a few weeks before and you're like, you were thinking, oh, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if I sent it to you. And it's because you were going to share it on your Instagram, but you could be asked with a shitstorm.
Yeah, I was going to. So yeah, the Apple Watch versus the Whoop band. I just knew that if I share, because sometimes that's what I do on social media, I don't really post anything anymore. I put things on my stories instead. So usually it's a very low effort thing for me to do, just screenshot and link evidence or studies, and then the people that are interested in looking into that, there you go, off you go, have a look. Yeah. But I looked at this paper and it did give me a little smile inside, you know, because I do have a bias against things like Whoop bands, etc., admittedly, which I'll come on to later. But I was seconds away from sharing it onto my social media. And then I did like a double take and thought, now, do you know what? People were so emotionally attached to their Whoop bands. And I know that I've got some Whoop band fanatics on my Instagram that if they saw me posting this study, I know that I'm going to get my fucking DMs blown up by them.
Yeah, it just can't be asked for it, can you?
You know, I could not be fucked. So I actually did a bit of gatekeeping.
And I'm going to get the flack now.
Yeah, good. So yeah, direct all flack to Bill, because I was trying to protect you.
Yeah, brilliant. Right. Apple Watch versus Whoop. I should probably make this clear, actually, is that this paper was on the Apple Watch Series 6 and the Whoop 3.0, because I believe there is later versions of both of those now, right? So I can say with some confidence, you've probably heard of the Apple Watch. You've heard of Apple, no doubt. The Apple Watch, you've probably heard of as well. And in more recent times, you might have heard of Whoop. because that started to come to the forefront of the wearable health device. Okay, so if we just quickly just summarize both these products, Apple Watch I would class as more of an all-rounder in the way that you can use it as a watch. It is an actual watch. It's got loads of little apps. You can play music from it. These days you can do fucking all sorts in it now, really. And obviously it's, there's a big part of it is health and fitness as well. Okay, whereas Whoop is literally just a band. It's a band, a health and fitness device. There's no watch face. It's basically a monitor which sends data. It just sends data to your app on your phone. So it's literally one job is to be a health and fitness tracking device. Okay.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not even, it's a monthly subscription. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not a one time.
That's actually news to me. I never knew that. I just assumed it was a wearable.
Now, so I'm not sure if they make you, is there an upfront fee? Regardless if it's an upfront fee, I can't remember, but I know there's definitely a, I think it's like £30 a month or something daft like that. It's quite a lot. You know, I'll actually pull this up.
That's a gym membership. £30 a month of a 12-month minimum commitment. Jesus.
Yeah, you just found it. Yes, you don't have to. You don't pay anything up front, but you have to pay £30 a month for, I mean, that's fucking ridiculous.
Minimum commitment, though.
Yeah, minimum
commitment. So they lock you into it.
Well, so you're basically paying, what, £360 anyway?
Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. That is a gym membership.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And obviously the Apple Watch, you pay one fee and then that's it. You've got the watch. Okay, you do what you want with it at that point. Right. So if we go into the actual study itself, basically what they got was 29 participants and they all completed 5 resistance-based exercises. Okay, so they were the barbell back squat, barbell deadlift, barbell curl to overhead press, seated cable row and burpees. During the exercises, the heart rate was concurrently measured using the Polar H10, which is a chest heart rate monitor. So something you strap around your chest and it's just like a little tiny, what is it? It's like a little black monitor thing, isn't it? Which just sends data to your phone once again, but it's around your chest. So they had that on. They had the Apple Watch Series 6 and the Whoop 3.0, and it was measured using all three of them so they could basically compare it. I'll give you a quick recap because we've just obviously spoke the Apple Watch and the Whoop 3.0. With the chest straps, I think we spoke about this way back in like, was it episode 4 or 2 of the podcast? But there's nothing really changing in that space in terms of they are the most accurate. Yeah. I think it was like something daft, like 99% accurate.
The placement is directly over the source that you're trying to monitor, which is your heart.
There's less to get involved. Obviously, we won't go into all the factors that affect your ability to monitor heart rate. But yeah, whenever they look at the chest ones, they are the most accurate compared to a watch, for example. Okay.
It can monitor it more in real time, whereas with a watch that may be around your, you know, down your wrist, it's more kind of measuring the pulse.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there could be like a bit of delay from the heart to the wrist, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm assuming. Yeah. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. A doctor might be listening to this and go, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. But basically, obviously, just a further point that they are so accurate is that this was basically used as the baseline. So what if they were comparing the Apple Watch and the Whoop to the chest strap to see what the difference was, okay? So the question is really, what is better, the Apple Watch or the Whoop? Now, you might assume the Whoop, simply because that is literally its only fucking job, is to be a fitness device and track your fitness metrics.
I'm assuming that the Apple Watch is better at telling the time.
Well, I hope so, yeah. Everyone's got a watch face.
It's got a watch face and the other one hasn't.
I fucking hope so, yeah. But basically, the results, I mean they varied across exercises and intensities, which is quite normal. But what was indicated was that the most favourite outcomes were for the Apple Watch. So that actually came out on top overall. I mean, both had low agreement with burpees, which
I would
shows me...
I would expect that, though.
Yeah,
because
you know what?
When there is wild, evidence to kind of show that, like with fitness trackers, like the more high-intensity short durations, the less accurate it is. Now, once again, I'm going to pull out a theory from my arse here. I might be right, I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But with these kind of devices, they work off like a mathematic formula where they'll measure your heart rate for 15 seconds and then it times it by 4. Now, with something like burpees and short and stop and start, etc., at high intensity,
it's a sudden spike.
And it'll do that mathematical formula with that massive acute spike. Mm. Whereas if it's like a steady state run,
heart rate zone 2, just floating around a little steady heart rate.
That's the thing, isn't it? You're sticking to a prolonged zone that allows that mathematical formula to get a better reading, a more stable reading.
I mean, they're obviously getting more technical now, so they are becoming more accurate, you'd hope. But as I said, this is the thing as well, which makes this more problematic. Obviously, they both had low agreement, is the Whoop is associated with CrossFit quite heavily.
Yeah.
And CrossFit is a very intense, burpees, fucking hell, you live and breathe in CrossFit doing burpees, but it's a very intense activity. So this, to me, it doesn't really offer much promise in terms of its accuracy if it's got low agreement with burpees.
100%. Bearing in mind, a lot, not even if you take burpees away, You know, you look at, I mean, look, when we look at the exercises performed in this study, it tends to be, apart from the burpees, more traditional kind of movements, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when we look at CrossFit, a lot of CrossFit is associated with those high intensity movements,
yeah,
clean and presses, etc., things that are quite acute movements, sudden, short and sharp.
I don't want to be all negative, Nancy, on wearables in general. I think we mentioned last time, even with the Whoop and the Apple Watch, is that the importance of trends, because sometimes you can use these devices to identify trends and monitor the trend, regardless if it's startled accurate or not, if that makes sense. Obviously, don't get obsessed with it. It's quite difficult to... Basically, the idea is that you can maybe see, I don't know, if it tells you some sleep data or it tells you your heart rate on an exercise. Even if it's way off, if it's consistently way off, you can still monitor it. You can still see the difference of it. But the problem I find is that people get obsessed with those numbers then.
Right, exactly that. And this is why I've always had an issue with these kind of devices,
yeah,
where they kind of like monitor your mobility, they monitor your recovery as well, which I know the Whoop band does as well.
Yeah. Well, we've seen Whoop does strain, doesn't it? Does your strain for the day. Tells you how fucked you are.
I don't think that's beneficial.
No, it's no
sleep. Anyone,
it's no
really.
Sleep, Tom. If you're going to the gym at 5 p.m. and you look at your watch at 4 and it says your strain is, you're saying you're fucked, that's telling you you're fucked. You're going to go into the gym with this mindset of, oh, my Whoop's telling me I'm fucked today. Should I even be going? Should I even bother?
It's really funny because I kind of like, I had this theory long before I actually ended up witnessing it. But then eventually I did actually witness it in person. That's where this person was so obsessed with the data on their phone about how their mobility had, you know, been shit and how their recovery was going shit as well, that they actually started training less. And it's all they could think about. It's all they would talk to me about. Yeah, like, oh, this is said, like, it's really shit. Yeah, so, you know, things aren't going well. It's like, but you've also told me that when you're training, things feel fine. Almost kind of going off of like your own perceived exertion of the session. It's like, you said the exercise feels fine. You're doing the same weights, or you was doing the same weights until this app starts telling you to stop. It's like, I think it's just interfering in a negative way. It's exactly no C, because you said it kind of puts this idea in your head. And bearing in mind, this is technology with a margin of error, as we've kind of already spoken about now. So what if this app says, you know, you are 2% less recovered than what you was last week? Who gives a fuck? It doesn't surprise me, though, that this has taken off with CrossFitters. And I do think that with the Whoop band, a lot of it is kind of like almost a statement. You know, it's kind of like being part of the tribe. Yeah, it's like having a can of Nocco, you know.
Leave
it's like having
this,
your
Tom.
Headband, etc. I know. I saw you with a Nocco the other day, Bill.
Did you?
But do you see what I mean? Your Metcon shoes.
When did you see me with a Nocco?
Did I see a picture of you with a Nocco the other day?
A picture of me in a Nocco?
Holding a Nocco on social media.
I don't know. I put so much shit on social media.
Maybe, unless I dreamt it.
I probably was, to be fair, yeah. I probably dreamt it.
But do you see what I mean? It's more of like a wearable.
Oh yeah, CrossFit is very much in that world, because you've got to think, because I think we've mentioned it before, how CrossFit is a very, I don't know how, what class, you, it's a very middle class sport, you could say, simply because of the cost of it in general. The membership's not cheap, because obviously it's worth it, but it's not cheap. There's a lot of gear of it that people get, like skipping ropes and fucking lifters and belts and different types of trainers and like... Yeah, that's the companies know that they know these people buy the shit. They can bring out a new set of trainers every. If you look at a normal gym person, do they buy new gym trainers every single fucking 6 months?
I've been using the same ones for work, running,
but Nike
lifting,
Metcons, Reebok Nanos, Rads. They bring out different colorways. They bring out different types of. So they do like upgrades. For example, they bring out the Nano 11 or the Nano 10. Yeah. The difference will be marginal, but they know the fuckers will buy them. They know us little fuckers with the CrossFit will buy them. So they 100%. Bring out the same with the Whoop. They can bring out like the 3.0, the 4.0. Know, oh, we've added an extra 2% accuracy. It's also got a different colorway. We've got a Mongolian fucking. You know, we've got all these different colors and stuff like.
And I could see it would be the exact same with the Whoop band as well. You know,
Tom, just to interject, while we're talking, I was pulled up something here. This was published in October 2022. This is Whoop. They've put an article out saying Whoop proven most accurate wearable in heart rate and heart variability measurements. And they've quoted a study that said they're 99.7% heart rate accuracy.
Yeah. Who did the study?
The Australian Institute of Sport. The study is a validation of 6 wearable devices for estimating sleep, heart rate and heart rate variability in healthy adults. I think it's important we see what they're actually doing.
Link that over to the chat box, mate. And
have a quick look at this. I think it's important we do have a little look.
Conflicts of interest are members of a research group at Queensland University, the Sleep Lab, that receives support for research, such as funding and equipment, from Whoop Incorporated.
You serious?
However, Whoop was not involved in the design, conduct, or reporting of this study. Still a little bit concerning, though.
What did they get him to do then? Did they just get him to fucking sleep?
What is there? Let me have a look at the methodology. Hang on.
Yes,
see, I was cheeky. I shouldn't have looked at the conflict of interest first.
Yeah,
however,
you couldn't help yourself, could you? Yeah, you could.
I couldn't help myself. To be fair, mate,
it's important to mention, though, because like they can be like, oh, they didn't do anything, but.
Funded by Whoop, but we promised we had nothing to do with the study. Okay, so
this was literally for them sleeping. This was nothing. This was not. They weren't doing any activity. So, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like what they had was a gold standard assessment for sleep and for heart rate. And then they compared that to the six.
They didn't actually use it to monitor exercise.
No.
So they did it in a steady state setting, which is sleep.
Yeah, so basically what they've done there, guys, is they've pulled this stat up to say that. So let's talk about this, because this paper I've just found as we were talking. Someone listening could be a Whoop advocate and straw mouse and be like, but look on this Whoop website, it says this. Yeah, okay, great. It says 99.7%. The study they first linked. Accurate if you're sleeping. That's fucking irrelevant because it's supposed to be an activity monitor, right? It's also funded, that the place it's done at is funded by Whoop. Obviously, they didn't get involved, which is fine.
They just watch from the balcony.
Okay, there's a second study, Tom.
Stand by.
There's a second study. Okay, there's a second study evaluating the typical day-to-day variability of Whoop-derived heart rate variability in Olympic water polo athletes. This is the same firm who did it. See what I mean, guys? We're reading research on a fly here. That's how fucking, you know, we're digging deep here. It's a live research read. There'll be lots of editing, by the way, so don't worry.
I was going to say, this is going to need lots of editing where it's very fast, rapid fire.
Yeah, just silence of just me reading a fucking research paper in the middle of the podcast. That paper's fucking bollocks. That's nothing. That's not compared to anything.
Main sources of error were that the polar strap misclassified 31% of PSG wake as light sleep. Oh, Jesus.
What are you reading?
So it's just on sleep, because I'm desperately trying to find if they actually had anyone exercise here.
Yeah, it's fucking pointless otherwise. Yeah, there was a study about water polo. Let me send you that one, but that looks like it's not compared to anything at all.
I haven't got to their conclusion yet. Let's have a look at that. Indicated that all six wearable devices, including this study, are valid for the field-based assessment of total sleep time. So even the conclusion of this first one you sent me, Bill, says that all of the wearables in this study, including the Whoop, could be useful to assess your total sleep time. But on the Whoop website, they've conflated it with, you know, it's extremely accurate compared to in what context? Exercise? Because we've now got evidence that suggests the other way.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because they've been clever the way they've worded this, proving the most accurate wearable in heart rate, okay? If you obviously dig deep, you'll realise it's on sleep, okay? So they've not really lied or anything, but people will look at Whoop and think they associate with doing activity. So they'll look at this and think, well, that must mean when you're doing activity as well, right? But it doesn't seem to be the case.
Fuck it, I might actually post all of this to my stories after and just bear the brunt, the fury of all the CrossFitters.
Obviously, guys, I just want to make this clear, is that this is on the Whoop 3.0, okay, we're talking about. Even the study we've just pulled up is the Whoop 3. They've obviously got the Whoop 4.0 now. So for all we know, they've kind of fixed all these issues and it is now much better. I can't.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Maybe as it stands. As it stands, we'll talk about the Whoop 3.0, okay.
But even then, like, it is still just like a very Gucci heart rate monitor. And when I say a Gucci one, I just mean like an expensive one.
Yeah, and I think go back to that whole obsession thing. Regardless, people become obsessed with these numbers. And if it's not even accurate in the first place, okay, I know I said you can use it as a trend, but if people then get obsessed of like, oh, why is my heart rate so fucking high doing burpees? Why am I fucking dying? Like, is it like, it's like, well, no.
I mean, I've already said that my main issue is in regards to the psychology of what that recovery part of the app and the device itself may kind of have on someone. Mm-hmm. But another problem I have with it is that the Whoop is specifically designed for exercise and performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's specifically designed for that one purpose, yeah? Whereas the Apple Watch is just like a jack of all trades.
Which is a technology watch. It's a smartwatch.
A jack of all trades. It's just there as an extra feature and it still outperforms. So yeah, Apple Watch all the way for me.
What I will say is, if you are going to do specific heart rate zone training, because that is quite a thing, especially if you're someone who's like an endurance athlete, you do lots of runs and stuff, like you might do heart rate zone tune training and stuff like that, I would 100% recommend a chest monitor, okay?
Yeah.
They're going to be far more accurate. They're very cheap as well. You can get them for like less than 50 quid. I'll leave a link actually down in the show notes, because you can get them on Amazon. There's a pretty good one, I think, on the Polar one. I'll leave a link in the show notes so it's nice and easy for you to look at. I think it's less than 50 quid.
Yeah.
It'll do the job. It'll do the job for you.
I mean, we're not saying that you can't use a fitness tracker like a watch or even a Whoop in the sense of, you know, like doing a steady state specific zone training like zone two, etc. Maybe not zone three, but, you know, zone two. But if you can afford it and the heart rate training does matter to you in regards to monitoring that heart rate, then yeah, as Bill says, like, probably go for a chest strap.
If you're doing heart rate zone specific training, if it's not accurate, it's fucking useless. You're not doing heart rate zone training then. If you're supposed to be in heart rate zone two and your watch is pinging you all over the place and your heart rate's not even moved, then you could be just sprinting thinking, why has it not gone to heart rate zone two yet? And you're literally sprinting max effort trying to get it to heart rate zone two.
It does happen. It happens with my clients. My clients like to look at their heart rates and, like, you know, I've had it during, like, people doing the beep test and they've gone to check their heart rate and it's like, why is it only 89? You know, it's like, fucking hell, I'm still doing the formula.
Exactly. I mean, I've always used...
the run's done now.
In my experience from using chest straps, and I've done heart rate zone 2 training, it is good. It does tend to be very stable, right? And it does tend to do the job. And it feels about right as well. If you go off feel as well, it feels about right for what it should do. We'll leave that study, of course, linked below. Just basically accuracy. If you want to get an Apple Watch, Whoop strap, whatever, if you like them, fantastic. Just don't get obsessed with the numbers, right? Fuck's sake, stop getting obsessed with numbers. Especially things like the recovery stuff, right? You know how you feel better than yourself, right? The watch...
100%.
Like, you can tell how you feel better than a watch can, right? So don't let it dictate your activity because of, you know, a little strain meter on a fucking app.
If training felt good or it felt standard, like business as usual to you, but then your app suddenly says, or your watch suddenly says, oh, you know, your recovery was shit. What are you going to do? Like, not train or, you know, lower the dosage? Honestly, I wouldn't bother. Ignore it.
Okay, guys, before we go into the next two pieces of news, because they are kind of linked quite well, of course, it's that time again when the society comes to the forefront of discussion. Oh, wrong, fuck's sake, not that one. Fuck, that's... No,
that was
not,
very loud.
Was making it sound like the society's like some really... Hang on.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That was wrong as well. That was even worse than the last one.
Yeah. That's more jazzy. We've used it before, actually, haven't we? Didn't we use this when we did like a video for someone? I'm pretty sure we sent that to someone as a video. Quite long. You got some bangs and glasses on.
I tried to put them on with a beat.
I'm pretty sure, did we use that when we sent like a video to someone who joined Patreon?
Possibly. Probably. I'm going to go probably.
Well, that's the new Patreon theme tune. Anyway, we got there in the end. Of course, society members. I'm starting to run out of things to say, really. I just thank you, really. Obviously, Colleen, Jenny, producers of the show. Hope you still enjoy producing the show. Hope you're enjoying the content, as are the rest of you. Behind-the-scenes stuff every single week. Early podcast pretty much every single week. It's very exciting over there.
It is. I mean, you say that we're starting to run out of things to say, but luckily, I spent a whole weekend planning filler for these segments.
Right.
So, weather's still holding up.
Oh God, here we go.
Had a little bit of drizzle earlier on. Yeah, it was actually quite sunny in West London this morning, but yeah, we've got a bit of drizzle now. What do you think
Sorry,
of that?
Bill. I'm busy wanking. Tom's internet.
That's going to be our new thing. If you ever go off
in hindsight, maybe just stick to the AI.
Every time you go off on it, I'm just going to play that little clip. I'm busy wanking. God, if people listen to their first time listening, they'll be like, what the fuck is that? That was AI Tom, everybody, if you're not aware.
Yeah, it wasn't actually me.
That was an AI version of Tom that I made for an episode about artificial intelligence, funny enough.
There you go. Man-made horrors.
Man-made horrors, yeah. Obviously, thank you, patrons. If you want to see some video content, if you want to get the podcast early, if you want to help us with the running costs of this podcast and help us grow and flourish into the wide world of podcasts as it goes, then yeah, check out the links in the show notes. And join us in the society that we do indeed live in.
We do. I have no defence against that. We do.
Moving on to the next piece of news. And that is, does keto stop gains? I feel like we're doing lots of revisiting in this episode because we also spoke about this way fucking back at the start of the podcast, didn't we?
What is science if it is not constantly revisiting the same subject with different methodologies, with different people running it? Because you never know, we might someone might do the one weird trick in their study that completely changes how we think.
Yeah. I mean, that just shows you how long we've done this podcast, eh? Been a long time. Yeah. But yeah, it was back in the diet series we spoke about the keto diet.
Yeah.
But today we're looking at a new paper, and that is low carbohydrate availability impairs hypertrophy and anaerobic performance. Dun, dun, dun. Basically, essentially what they found was it was due to alterations in anabolic signaling, protein synthesis and myogenesis, which is the formation of skeletal muscular tissue, that when you restrict your carbs for 8 to 12 weeks, you're going to have limited hypertrophy responses when you do weights, basically. Right. So yeah. If you limit your carb, that's why it's people, when they talk about it, it's keto stop gains, because keto is low carbohydrates, if you're not aware. So if you restrict your carbs for 8 to 12 weeks, this paper found that you're going to have limited hypertrophy responses to when you go to the gym and do your resistance training. And by hypertrophy, that means build muscle, right? So you want to get big arms, big fucking legs. If you're limiting your carbs, this data is suggesting that you will limit your ability to do so.
I mean, this does kind of like stay in line with previous research on this kind of subject, though. I mean, keto does get bashed a hell of a lot, and although... Yeah,
let's just make sure actually state it's not impossible, by the way. We're not saying it's like you can't build muscle on a keto diet. It's just limited in comparison to normal carbohydrate intake, right?
Stole the words right out of my mouth there. Yeah, so we're not saying, it's impossible. We're just saying that it's probably not... Oh, I'm going to use that word I don't like. It's probably not optimal.
Oh, optimal, bro.
I know. I feel like I should just go full on Huberman here and just like start talking about how it's all to do with the midichlorians or something. I don't know.
The midichlorians. Yeah. Right. Like a Jedi.
I know. I'm getting really into Star Wars again lately. It's been great.
No, brilliant. I just finished Rebels and Mandalorian last night.
Oh, mate. Great thing about having kids is, watching my younger son find out who Darth Vader really is.
Was he excited?
And I feel like I can't actually spoil it in case there's that one person that's watching this and going... Sorry, listening to this and thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, I should probably watch the first Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it. It's a very exciting
Don't want to spoil it. But yeah, it makes me like a kid again, like seeing the excitement, like of, finding out who Darth Vader is.
You need to watch cartoons with him, mate, because we love them as well. But they're great, the cartoons, Clone Wars and Rebels.
When they first came out, I had no interest, but now I'm seeing all these clips on YouTube
they're
shorts, fucking, you know.
Mate, they're unbelievable.
When I have my short attention span moments and I want to, you know, have that quick dopamine rush, you know, and I go onto YouTube Shorts and I see loads of Clone Wars stuff and I'm like, this looks shit hot. I would have loved this back in 2009. What the fuck was I doing with my life?
Mate, it gets pretty dark. It does get pretty dark as well.
I know. I was watching a bit of it without spoiling it.
Yeah, we see some Anakin stuff and when you see him like sort of flirting the dark side, he just goes rogue, mate, starts force choking people. It's like a kid's cartoon. He's just fucking hell. People up. Yeah.
Kids' shows just hit different back in the day. What the fuck are we talking about here?
Yeah, sorry, guys. If you don't like Star Wars, do apologise. It's probably like you're probably saying, shut the fuck up.
But no, if you don't like Star Wars, you could get fucked, you know, just saying.
Back to carbs.
Yeah, back to carbs or back to keto even. But yeah, we're not saying that it's impossible. It's just that it's not optimal for, you know, resistance training or, you know, hypertrophy, building muscle. I mean, there's several reasons for that. Well, some main reasons for it, which we'll kind of go on to in a minute. But the thing is, you can still build muscle. You can, of course, lose weight. And, of course, you can lose fat. And, yes, for some people, it might be sustainable. But from what the research shows us, for a lot of people, it is a very tricky kind of thing to do.
Yeah. They also go on to talk about how it limits performance output and anaerobic activity. That, of course, makes sense. That, you know, when you do an anaerobic activity, let's say you're doing burpees, for example, like we spoke about earlier, carbohydrates is going to be your main fuel source for that, really. Yeah. If you've got no carbs in the system, you're going to limit your ability to perform to a high level. Okay, so that should be pretty known by now, right?
And I mean, we've spoken about research before where like you do take like fast acting carbs, like cyclic dextrin, which is a specific supplement for carbohydrates, but it shows you that performance improvement in anaerobic activity.
So we're going to talk about why, you know, reasons potentially why it's also going to limit your ability to build muscle on this keto diet. And that is because one of the commonly associated things that people have with keto is the appetite. There's normally an association of lower appetite levels. So while this might be beneficial if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to build muscle, you do need to eat quite a bit, don't you? You need to be in a calorie surplus normally. That's the most, I'm going to say it, Tom, the most optimal way of building muscle. You need to be in a calorie surplus, right? But if your appetite is lesser, that could be problematic, couldn't it? Because if you don't want to eat, but you've got to eat more because you're still 1,000 under your surplus, like you're in a deficit of 1,000 at the moment, then that's going to hinder your ability to build muscle.
Not only might you spin your wheels a little bit, but you may also feel less energetic. And actually, that's another thing I want to say. Like, a lot of the argument I hear from people that have done keto from an anecdotal level is they say, oh, everyone talks about how you have low energy. And you might at first, but then you adapt to it and, you know, actually it gives you more energy. And it's like, okay, for your anecdotal experience, if that's how you feel, I can't tell you otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's true for you, it's true for you or whatever you believe. But this study is like 8 to 12 weeks, which is a fair amount. It's, you know, time, and it still shows that performance drop, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a performance drop off, but, you know, compared to like a carbohydrate fed group, you know, it still shows that it's probably, yeah, not as optimal.
We mentioned weight loss, so we'll probably look into that.
Yeah.
One thing I want to state very clear is that keto is not magical when it comes to weight loss. It is a viable option. You could say, like, we're not saying it's impossible to lose weight on a keto diet. But what is important from what I've seen research-wise, that is not superior to any other diet if calories are controlled accordingly.
The only nuance I'd add to that is you may lose more weight on keto, but compared to like a, you know, a traditional, both are in the same kind of a deficit on the, you know, their diet, they may not be losing more fat. They may be losing more weight because of the water, but not more fat.
Yeah, that's actually important because it's 1 gram of carbs in the body is 3 grams of water. So if you imagine, quick maths, if you drop shit loads of carbs from your diet suddenly because you've gone keto, your water weight is going to decrease, isn't it? So as Tom just said there, yeah, initially you will lose, the scales will show you've lost a lot more weight. So you might
initially be really excited
going, yeah, great. But it does not mean you've lost fat. Okay, so that's really, really important to note. So obviously, if I backtrack to what I said, if you put two people on the same calorie control thing, yeah, the keto might look like it's lost more initially. But if you did it over a long period of time, it would obviously balance out, okay, in terms of fat and like body composition, whatever we would go into. But yeah, obviously though, if we look at an application for this, if you are an athlete trying to lose weight relatively quickly, maybe keto is a good option. If you're trying to lose water weight quickly, who knows? I mean, I don't know. It could be a good option to drop carbs, go
if
keto
you put,
for a
like,
bit.
A weigh-in.
There is applications for, we're trying to basically be a bit balanced. Okay. We're not trying to just say keto is fucking, it's not like, I mean, the carnivore diet is something I would completely fuck off.
Or another application, if you're a member of like some form of like weight loss club and there's a cash prize.
Oh, there we go.
You know.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with
this? That's fucking crafty.
This is the most fucking unethical life hack I could ever speak
week
of.
Week before the weigh-in, just fucking eliminate all carbs.
Yeah, you could probably actually maintain your calories, but just, you know, swap out the
just
carbs
whatever
for
you do,
high-fat diet.
Don't do a burpee. Just do not do a burpee, whatever
don't do
you
a
do.
Burpee.
Right? You will find.
Do you know what? If it's a burpee competition, completely swap around the advice.
Smash loads of carbs, yeah.
Yeah, smash loads of carbs. By the way, just in case you turn that into a fucking sound clip of me, that was pure satire.
You sure?
After seeing those fucking TikTok comments, have replied to, you know, on our podcast, it almost feels like I have to kind of like put up a disclaimer now, where like 90% of the shit I say at this point is a satire take, a satirical take.
I reckon I could make shitloads of content just from your little satirical takes. It would do really well as well. But the thing is, to show you the state of how bad social media can be is that they would actually do really well. We'd get so much, you'd probably get so many views in it and people would be like, yeah, that's a great idea. That's fucking mental. That just shows you the state of what is being consumed on social media.
I know. God, just, tragic. You know, relax.
Yeah, absolutely. What was it?
Life's
what was
a
it?
Big joke.
What was I sent you the other day? Hold on. I'm going to fucking play it through the speaker. You know when they said every science, health science...
First thing you want to do when you wake up is run at a full sprint, staring directly at the sun. This will help reset your circadian rhythm and regenerating your Heineken levels. I would recommend running towards a body of water, preferably salt water. Meta-analyses have concluded that human contact between the skin of a human's fingers and a live gray white shark is critical for your schmugenflugen. First thing,
honest to God,
that was you, Tom. That was literally you.
I know, but this is exactly what I was talking about earlier, though. Like, there's people like Huberman where they can just spout shit off, and They can just make up anything.
Yeah, and people love it. But that was captured, by the way, every health science podcast, which does make me laugh. Hopefully we're not like that. We try to be the opposite of that. That's the whole idea of this podcast, to be the opposite of what the fuck that is.
I mean, I'd like to just kind of throw out there just a quick statement that half the shit I probably say is wrong as well.
What? That's satire, isn't it?
No.
Which means you can't say that on an evidence-based podcast.
I do it on purpose.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I do
sake.
It on purpose. Because I want you to repeat these things to your friends, colleagues, family members, religious leaders.
Some massive gaslighter.
Yeah.
You're a health
but
and
I'm doing
gaslighter.
It for their benefit.
What do you mean their benefit? So
to repeat exactly what I just said, 27% of everything I say is probably bullshit. But 98% of it is probably the truth. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying.
I'm sorry if you've just lost about 15,000 brain cells listening to that monologue, that percentage monologue by Tom there. Basically, we'll keep things simple because we're not like every health science podcast that video was basically implied. Take around that piece. Keto, will it stop your gains? It won't stop your gains completely. That'd be very social media of me to say, but it will impair your ability to build muscle over an 8 to 12 week period, according to this paper anyway. And there is other evidence we've looked at as well, which in this kind of echoes on from there, that it's just limited, basically.
And I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I know there's going to be outliers out there, you know, that people that do well on the keto diet in regards to their goals, in regards to lifting weight, you know, in regards to exercise performance, maybe running, weight loss as well. So all different kinds of outcomes.
What we'll do, we'll move straight into these update to carb recommendations because it is kind of linked quite well, right? So the question is, kind of already gone into it, is why do people not worry? Because you do get this, people don't worry as much about carb when it comes to lifting. Most people you'll talk to, when you look at them from a cardio point of view, they understand cardio, yeah, carbs, great. But when it goes to like a normal gym setting, they sometimes just think, oh, you don't need carbs as much. They don't say you don't need it, but they'll be like, oh, they're not as important. Because they don't think of it as... Because when you think of going to the gym and doing a few curls, it doesn't feel as intense for you to do 20 fucking burpees in a row. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can still be intense. Of course, you can still get sweaty and fucking knackered doing a weight training, of course. But there's obviously a different perception of it, okay? And when we look at the studies on this, so these are people who actually look at the data and why they wouldn't think it's important is when people look at whole muscle glycogen stores, okay, so carbs or liver, they're normally only depleted around 24 to 40% when you look at a normal resistance training workout. So if we look at, I don't know, something in a squat session, 24 to 40% will be depleted. And people go, okay, great, that's not a lot. That's fine. Whatever, okay. And what normally then happens is people combine this data with what you'd call a petrol/gas tank metaphor. As in, I know Tom, I see Tom's face there, he absolutely loves when we get compared to cars. Loves it. But basically, if we get compared to having a gas tank, and then obviously that statistic of 24 to 40%, you then have a common train of thought that glycogen storage is going to be pretty irrelevant for your typical lifter, your typical gym bro, right? The problem with this is, though, and I can see Tom is going to definitely agree with me here, is that the gas tank metaphor does not work in humans. it is not the same.
Funny enough, we're not cars.
Yeah, we're not cars. It does not work. So I'll try to keep this simple. I'm not going to go into fucking the ins and outs of it. But basically, in human muscle, glycogen is stored in three separate or different compartments that function differently and they deplete at different rates. So it's not a simple gas tank. Unless your car has three different gas tanks that do different things and depletes at different rates, it's not the same, okay? So that just reinforce that. We have three, in the muscle storage, we have three different compartments and they're going to function differently and they're going to deplete at different rates.
Yeah.
So yes, while as a whole, there might be a 24 to 40% depletion, okay, that's not bollocks. There'll be certain areas that are going to deplete more rapidly and have more of an impact. Obviously, we won't get straight into all the technical stuff because it would be completely pointless. But basically, there'll be certain areas which will impact your ability to perform in a resistance training setting, could deplete differently, right? So that 24 to 40% is as a whole, but it doesn't mean it's all in evened out. It's not like across all three compartments. It could be, you know, different areas, right?
Yeah, pretty much what you said there, that it's not as simple as, oh, well, it's all stored in one place. Yeah, it's all stored in one body, but it's different locations with different, like, how quick you can kind of access those stores. The rapid one being obviously, skeletal muscle.
And then if we look at how much you're going to need, because obviously this is supposed to be a carb recommendation update, this is, of course, as we say often, going to be context dependent. If you're someone, for example, who does higher rep ranges, your requirements are going to be different to someone that does, I don't know, 1 to 5 reps. I said earlier, if you're a power lifter who does 1 to 5, if you compare yourself to someone who does much higher rep ranges, naturally your energy requirements are going to be different in terms of carbs. Okay. So with that being said, what would our current carb recommendations be? Now, we have spoke about this again. Once again, we're fucking literally, this is like a complete like update episode, isn't it? We obviously spoke in the supplement series, which wasn't too long ago, about carbs, and we gave some recommendations there. We're kind of going to echo some of that. We are going to maybe add a little bit of new information in there as well. But the reason for that is we're going to keep on the lifting train, okay? We're going to keep on resistance training, because normally when you talk about carbs, it's for some more sports and endurance-based stuff. But
at least in our bias, yeah.
In our bias, yeah. If we keep on the lifting train, so resistance training stuff, the recommendation would be right now 3 to 4 grams per kilo of body mass, or around 1.5 to 2.5 grams per pound. Okay, if you use pounds, right? So 3 to 4 grams of carbs per kilo of body mass, or if you're in the States, for example, 1.5 to 2.5 grams per pound.
Yeah.
And this is going to enable adequate fueling, I'd say, for most people out there, most of you strength athletes out there. Of course, let me say again, context dependent. Don't come at me and go, well, actually, I need 4.3 grams because of my extra 2-minute run I do in the morning. People. Yeah, I don't give a fuck, mate. Right?
I've seen people do that with creatine.
Yeah, it's like, fucking, here we go.
Where it's like, well, actually, I can get it down to the 0.dot gram. So,
yeah,
come on.
Absolutely. But yeah, so
get a grip.
They will be the numbers. I'll probably, if I remember, bang them in the show notes just so you've got something to see there. But yeah, that should provide adequate fueling. Okay, 3 to 4 grams per kilo body mass. There's a few other numbers we'll go into as well. Let me just pull up my little chart here. Fantastic. Right, cool. So this is going to be more, I would say, people who are doing a bit more intense activity as well. So this could apply quite well to like CrossFit, where you do a lot of lifting and you do a lot of cardio based stuff as well. So if we were to put you in a moderate category, so this would be maybe an hour a day. So this would be like your normal person. You go to a CrossFit class once a day for an hour, right? A bit of lifting, bit of fucking few burpees in there, right? You're probably going to want 5 to 7 grams per kilo each day.
Yeah.
If we then bump that up to high, so let's say you're on an endurance program, you're doing 1 to 3 hours per day of moderate to high intensity exercise, you're going to potentially want 6 to 10 grams per kilo each day. And if we go to the very extreme end of stuff, so extreme exercise, 4 to 5 hours per day, so maybe you're a CrossFit Games athlete, or you're doing something like the Tour de France or something like, you know, basically something that's very high intensity or extreme sport endurance based, you're going to potentially want 10 to 12 grams per kilo each day. And that's a lot. If you do quick maths in your head now and just knew what you weighed and times that by 10, that's a big number of carbs.
I mean, obviously we kind of use like the CrossFit example there, but there's other things like, you know, even like bodybuilding, you know, if you've got like a high frequency of training throughout the week, you're in the gym and
if you're a professional bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, tactical athletes as well, you know, if you're out, you know, you're tabbing, etc. Even someone says here, you know, like the very high category, things like the Tour de France, you know, where you're cycling for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know. But the simplest advice here is that if you know that your exercise is lasting for a long period of time, you know, an hour and like above an hour, simply just start increasing your carbohydrate intake.
Well, you know, I'll go through a few things, Tom, because there's probably when you're trying, I gave you some ranges, even on the first bit when I said about lifted 3 to 4, 5 to 7, there's some ranges there. So you're probably thinking, okay, how do I put myself in this range, right? So
yeah,
what you probably want to do is you want to ask yourself a few questions. So I would say things like, do you typically train with high rep ranges? So for example, are you doing shitloads of reps every workout? Is your program on, I don't know, if you've got a lot of total training volume, let's say you've got high volume of training. Yeah. So as Tom said, a competitive bodybuilder would have a high volume of training. Do you do multiple training sessions a day for a given muscle group? So I don't know, let's say every day you're training, you end up training legs every day unintentionally. I don't know, because you can't help it.
That.
Because of your sport or your activity, you basically can't get away of not using your legs. If you're doing that, for example, do you do concurrent activity? Once again, we spoke about that before. So that would be if you were to do, let's say, for example, you were going to do a big squat session. You were trying to, I don't know, do a powerlifting squat in the morning. And then the afternoon, you went for a 5K run.
Yeah.
Or even straight after each other. So let's say you did it back to back. You did a run, because CrossFit, for example, we argued it could be concurrent training because you would do a strength piece or a weightlifting piece straight into some sort of WOD, which could be very cardio based. That would be concurrent training. So if you've answered yes to a few of those questions, I would advise that you err on the side of caution when it comes to your carb intake. right? Yeah. Because if you go a little bit over, this is obviously if you're still keeping your calories on track, because if you go a bit over and you're not monitoring your calories, you could put weight on unintentionally. But if you're keeping your calories on track and you just increase your carbs by a bit, you've kept your macros in line, whatever, nothing bad's really going to happen. You're going to potentially have the energy to do stuff. But if you go underneath, if you strip back because you're worried, that could impact your performance.
Whereas increasing it might actually have the opposite effect, and it might actually increase total daily energy expenditure as well.
So if you're saying yes to some of those questions, I would probably go to the higher end of those ranges I gave you earlier.
This is where I'd also say, and I don't really want to use this term because I'm going to say common sense.
I think we said optimal again.
But do you know what they say about common sense, Bill? It's not very common, is it?
It's not very common. No.
However, I'm going to risk saying it, you know, and use a bit of common sense here. So, okay, if the chart says, you know, 1 to 3 hours per day of moderate to high intensity exercise, cool. But I know there will be people that go to the gym for those time periods, but
do fuck all.
Most of it is kind of just like sandbagging the session. Technically, they've actually done enough exercise that you could fit into just an hour. Mm-hmm. But most of it is kind of like mincing around the gym and just like talking, kind of like, you know, stretching against the racks, etc., and just prowling around, being one of those kind of people. And if that's your bag, okay, whatever. But I wouldn't say, oh yeah, because you've been here, you know, nearly 2 hours, 3 hours in the gym, maybe you should start smashing some, you know, Haribo. You've got to get that carb intake in.
And that is why, because that's why, if we go back to that first number I gave you, 3 to 4 grams per kilo body mass, should provide adequate fueling for most lifters, most strength athletes out there. That will give you enough, basically. If you go above that, most people won't, unless they're doing extra stuff on top of that, they probably won't need the extra carbs. Like the endurance program, 1 to 3 hours, that 1 to 3 hours, if you're doing an endurance program, you might be running for 2 hours. That's non-stop running. You're not having a break. So you need the carbs to fuel you for that 2 hours of continuous activity. If you're in the gym, as you said, Tom, for 1 to 3 hours, you're not doing curls for 2 hours solid. You're not constantly sitting there curling away. Do you know what I mean?
I have actually seen people sandbagging their training whilst eating, like, whether it was like gummy worms or something, some kind of sugary snack during, like, in between their very long rest periods. And it's like, fuck me, I don't think you've depleted your glycogen, if any at all, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, and do you know what? If that's their thing, like, whatever. I mean, I don't really agree with eating in the gym.
Yeah, I don't think you need to eat in the gym, really, unless you're having like a energy drink or something, you know, like a Lucozade or something.
Yeah, oh, liquid form, that's absolutely fine, you know, or unless, you know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm a diabetic, I don't know. You know, I could be totally wrong there, but do you see what I mean? Like, there are people out there that think that they're depleting a lot more glycogen than what they actually are, even.
Basically, carbs are great. Conclude again. Yeah, I mean, if you want,
they're so great. They're so good.
They are great. Yeah. I'll just set the number again. If you are a recreational lifter, go to the gym, 3 to 4 grams per kilo body mass, or 1.5 to 2.5 grams per pound, is a good place to be floating around. All right. And obviously, as Tom said, without common sense, which is obviously not very common.
Maybe we could start using some of our old metrics we were using before. You know, basically in regards to dosing your carbohydrates, if you're in the gym for. All right, let's say if you're doing a CrossFit activity for 2 hours, Bill, I'm going to say 200 Kinder Surprise capsules worth of rice.
What the fuck?
200 Kinder Surprise capsules. How much would that even be? How much does that even hold?
I don't know. If we're going off of like the big novelty size one that I got my kids for Easter, that's going to be a lot. Maybe I should have clarified that. Regular sized Kinder eggs.
If I say there's one in that holds 700 mil, it's like, fucking hell.
That's going to be a lot of rice. Maybe that's more of a Tour de France, you know. Maybe that's a Cambrian Patrol, I don't know.
I found the schematics of a Kinder Surprise egg. I've actually found the schematics.
You know, a HP DeskJet printer ink reservoir worth of jam.
Of jam?
That'd be a good carbohydrate source.
A pre-WOD carb intake.
Mate, you're going to have to start coming up with some here because these are going to start getting really obscure otherwise. A cardboard poster tube worth of oats.
Oh, I like that. Well, I've got one. A condom full of grapes.
Where the fuck have I heard that? That's Alan Partridge. I've heard that before.
What, a condom full of grapes?
God, trust a, you know, a Norfolk man to bring out an Alan Partridge example. A laptop CD disc tray worth of spam. That's not a carb sauce. That's for the keto. That's for the keto lot.
Okay, being inclusive. I like it. Yeah, I like it.
So I've got that envisioned in my head now. Just open up your CD tray and there's like a slice of Spam in there. Be a good prank to plan someone.
What else is it? I'm trying to think of a carb. I've got one.
I think we could get people to send these in, to be honest with you, mate.
A hollowed out dildo worth of Doritos.
That sounds more of like a smuggling operation. There you go. Pre-workout Doritos. It could happen.
Should we ask, you know what we'll do? After this episode's gone live, I'll put it on Instagram, on our Instagram, guys. I'll put a poll out on Instagram. So if you're not following our Instagram, that's also down in the show notes, at Chat Shit Get Fit Podcast. Get involved with the poll. We want your most obscure carbohydrate locations.
A medieval highwayman's leather coin purse full of...
Rice Krispies.
Yeah, Rice Krispies. Standard deliver. There you go.
God, we could be all night doing these, but I think people want to stop this now so they can go and spend time with their loved ones. Or
a hollowed out tennis ball full of caramel.
Caramel, that sounds lovely.
It does.
Get a little straw in there.
I don't know if the tennis ball's been used or not, but yeah.
You can hollow anything out, really, couldn't you?
Yeah.
We need to think of more objects that are already hollowed out as opposed to just hollowing out.
That's a bit easy, really, isn't it? The back of a TV remote with the batteries removed, full of Roundtree's fruit pastels.
I don't get many in there, mate. You get like three pastels in there.
Well, it depends. If it takes a double A, you know.
Is that for the keto lot as well?
It's got to be able to get a couple in there.
Double A. You want like a D cell? Oh, you know what you could do? You've seen rowing machine. Rowing machine's got D cell batteries.
They do.
The back of a rowing machine monitor without the D cell, full of fruit pastels.
You could easily get fruit pastel in there. That's an easy one, that. Yeah. I'm going to be at the gym tomorrow just looking at all the equipment going, yeah, that could definitely fit a Caramac.
We'll take those pictures, Tom, and then we'll just fire on the Instagram picture story.
Proof or it never happened.
I've completely lost. I think we concluded that.
I think we need to conclude it there.
Yeah, I think we've concluded it. Eat carbs.
The air vent that John McClane climbs through in Die Hard, filled with...
chocolate spread.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. That's a lot. I'm sure the cool air vent will keep it, you know, preserved as well.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say more now, but we need to wrap this up, don't we? Right, okay.
I'm going to not sleep tonight.
Guys, that's all the news this week. Right. Fucking absolute tangent at the end there. Before we head out, I'll keep this quick because I'm fully aware you're probably getting pissed off already. Are you subscribed to the podcast? I've mentioned this the last few weeks now. Are you subscribed? If you're not subscribed, go subscribe. We'll leave it there, right? Fantastic. It's been a pleasure as always.
Oscar Pistorius's bladed running leg smothered in marshmallow.
Filled with 9mm rounds.
Filled with fucking hell, right. On that note, I don't want to play this game anymore.
See you next week.
Red, violets are glorious. Never sneak up on Oscar Pistorius.
See you next week. Same time, same place for some more of the fitness news. See you soon.